Wow.
Yeah, I'm here, man.
The lights are growing dim. I know a life of crime led me to this sorry fate. And yet, I blame society. Society made me what I am.
That's bullshit. You're a white suburban punk, just like me.
But it still hurts.
You're gonna be all right, man. Maybe not.
On abortion, you've been pro-life your entire career.
Yeah.
You've been very staunchly pro-life.
Yeah.
Are there any circumstances in your mind in which an abortion should be legal?
Well, I think sometimes people talk about life of the mother as a situation, Charles. And in my sense is that one of the foundational things America is built on is a respect for life. And so I would say you optimize life. So, for instance, a woman has a tubal pregnancy or something. Well, technically, by my understanding, life begins at conception. So you've technically had conception, but the child doesn't have a chance and will soon kill the mother. Okay, so I would say in those kinds of situations, you try to optimize life. But, you know, my case in this, Charles, has been even if you sort of separate a little of the whole abortion question out, one of the things that I love about this country is the fact that Americans do consider life really important. And it's not because of some theoretical thing that you're on a talk show and somebody asks you about it, but you have September 11th, and you've got these guys that are running into a building that's about to collapse. They find somebody in a wheelchair. They never check their ID or anything like that, or whether they're important. They grab them, and they get them to safety, and they run back and get another one. Same kind of thing that we saw. Ollie North had some footage. You know, he's been right up in the front with cameras taking footage. This is over in Iraq, and there's a Marine, a big guy, and he's got this guy who's wounded over his shoulder, and he's running. The bullets are flying around, and there is a cameraman in a safe position saying, "Hey, that guy that the guy's fatigues are just up, and you can see this is an Iraqi citizen. This isn't a U.S. soldier." He says, "Hey, that's an Iraqi citizen. Why are you risking your life there?" And this Marine turns around and he looks straight into that guy's camera and he said, "Because that's what we do." And that spirit in America, I think, is so important for us to protect that idea of the importance of all of us.
Okay, so if an abortion could be considered in a case of, say, a tubal pregnancy or something like that, what about in the case of rape? Should it be legal or not?
Well, you know, people always want to try and make that as one of those things. Well, how do you slice this particularly tough sort of ethical question? It seems to me, first of all, from what I understand from doctors, that's really rare. If it's a legitimate rape, the female body has ways to try to shut that whole thing down. But let's assume that maybe that didn't work or something. You know, I think there should be some punishment, but the punishment ought to be in the rapist and not attacking the child. Okay.
Folks, I'd like to sing a song about the American dream. About me. About you. About the way our American hearts beat way down in the bottom of our chests. About that special feeling we get in the cockles of our hearts. Maybe below the cockles. Maybe in the subcockle area. Maybe in the liver. Maybe in the kidneys. Maybe even in the colon. We don't know. I'm just a regular Joe with a regular job. I'm your average white suburbanite slum. I like football and porno and books about war. I got an average house with a nice hardwood floor. My wife and my job, my kids and my car. My feet on my table and a Cuban cigar. But sometimes that just ain't enough to keep a man like me interested.
Oh, no.
No way. No, I've got to go out and have fun at someone else's expense.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I drive really slow in the ultra-fast lane while people behind me are going insane. I'm an asshole. Toilet and I piss on the seat. I walk around in the summertime saying, how about this heat? I'm an asshole. I'm an asshole. Sometimes I park in handicapped spaces while handicapped people make handicapped faces. I'm an asshole. Tell me I'm wrong. Nah, I'm a
skin hubcaps, an all-leather cow interior, and big brown baby seal eyes for headlights. Yeah! And I'm gonna drive around in that baby at 115 miles per hour, getting 1 mile per gallon, sucking down quarter pound of cheeseburgers from McDonald's in the old-fashioned non-biodegradable styrofoam containers. And when I'm done sucking down those greaseball burgers, I'm gonna wipe my mouth with the American flag, and then I'm gonna toss the styrofoam containers right out the side, and there ain't a goddamn thing anybody can do about it. You know why? Because we got the bomb, that's why. Two words, nuclear fucking weapons, okay? Russia, Germany, Romania, they can have all the democracy they want. They can have a big democracy cakewalk right through the middle of Tiananmen Square, and it won't make a lick of difference because we got the bomb, okay? John Wayne's not dead. He's frozen. And as soon as we find a cure for cancer, we're going to thaw out the Duke, and he's going to be pretty pissed off. You know why? Have you ever taken a cold shower? We'll multiply that by 15 million times. That's how pissed off the Duke's going to be. I'm going to get the Duke and John Cassavetes and Lee Marvin and Sam Peckinpah and a case of whiskey and drive down to Texas.
You know, you really are an asshole.
Why don't you just shut up and sing this song, pal? I'm an asshole.
Fine.
I think he missed.
He was going to kill me.
Shut up, Hitler. Rory, take Hitler and put him in that cupboard over there. Now, do it.
Right. Putting Hitler in the cupboard.
Cupboard. Hitler. Hitler. Cupboard. Right.
But I am the Führer.
Right. In you go.
Who are you?
Evergrande Brothers of History! Darth Vader! Versus Adolf Hitler!
I am Adolf Hitler, commander of the Third Reich. Little known fact, also dope on the mic. You are Vader, with your little boots and cape and helmet to cover up that burnt ass face. You have the force to move objects. I am a force truly evil, even went back in time and turned you back as a prequel. Cause look at you, you're not even a real person. I preferred you in Spaceballs, the Rick Moranis version.
You can't rhyme against the dark side of the force, why even bother? So many dudes been with your mom who even knows you on their father. You're a pissed off little prick with a Napoleon dick. You call that a mustache? I call that dirty Sanchez on your lip. You bitch, let me remind you who you're messing with. Everything that you did, I'm the motherfucker who invented it. I'm the original Dark Lord, you're like the Sorcerer's Apprentice. My soul troopers make yours look like someone took a piece of shit and cloned it.
You stink, Vader! Your staff smells something sour! You need to watch up, dog! Here, step in my shower! I'll turn all your friends against you, just my speeches breed haters! Put your lightsaber versus a clan of all your white neighbors!
Suck my robot ball! Now take a step back and let me freeze yours off! A little carbonite bat for your goop stepping ass! We'll call my homeboy in Israel, see who got the last laugh!
An ordinary dinner party. The sort of occasion we all enjoy. The men are exchanging witty stories. And look at the women. Aren't they pretty? Look at the way they laugh. They're delightful.
I wonder if the government should return to the gold standard. I think it should. Good. Then we're all agreed.
I think the government should stay off the gold standard so that the pound can reach a level that will keep our exports competitive.
The lady has foolishly attempted to join the conversation with a wild and dangerous opinion of her own.
Daphne, we're going home.
Women, know your limits. Look at the effect of education on a man and a woman's mind. Education passes into the mind of a man. See how the information is evenly and tidily stored. Now see the same thing on a woman. At first, we see a similar result. But now look, still at a reasonably low level of education, her brain suddenly overloads. She cannot take in complicated information. She becomes frantically and absurdly deranged. Look at see the proper way.
Good. So we're all agreed. We should return to the gold standard.
Oh, I don't know anything about the gold standard, I'm afraid, but I do love little kittens. They're so soft and furry.
I wanted to make this video to talk about how I am a female who is completely against feminism. Now, everything I'm about to say, I'm not saying that all feminists are like this. But my main purpose of this whole video is that I don't believe that feminism is equal for every human being in any way possible. First off, for a feminist to sit there and say that a man is dirty is just completely fucking ridiculous. And if you're gonna sit there and say that a man is dirty, well, bitch, so are you. There's a huge difference between feminism and women's rights. I am a strong believer in women's rights, and there's plenty of men out there that believe in women's rights too. And it seems to me that to be a feminist, you have to be a female or a transgendered female. Plenty of men out there think that women should have the same rights as men do, and yet there's some feminists who think that women should have more rights than men. What makes a woman more powerful than a man, and what makes a woman more righteous than a man? I just don't get why females would even have to hate on men in the first place. Men are human beings too. There's a lot of feminists who say that they want to be treated as a human being. Well, guys should have the same right to be treated as a human being. I think people tend to forget that women can't really live without men. Okay, sure, they can live without having a boyfriend, but what about having kids? When you have a kid, are you going to expect your kid to be a female? Are you going to completely disown your son if you have a son? Horrible. What a horrible parent you would be if you disowned your son, your own kid, just because it isn't a girl. And sure, you don't want kids. Well, good. You shouldn't be having kids if that's the case. I believe that men and women should be treated equally and given the same amount of rights. That goes for gay people, black people, Muslims, Catholics, everyone. I don't think just women should be treated as more superior. Everybody should be treated as superiors. Just because you have a vagina doesn't make you fucking better than anybody else. Usually I think of the stereotypical feminist to be a straight up hoe. And if you admit to being a feminist that does all these things, I think you're just looking for an excuse to be a bitch. Because like I've been rambling this whole entire film, I think everybody should be treated equally. If you have a penis or a vagina, or whatever race you come from, or whatever background you come from. Don't you dare think that I don't stick up for gay rights. Don't you dare think that I think it's wrong to be transgendered. Because I look and treat everybody as an equal. And I think everybody has the right to choose their path. Sure, you can be a feminist, but it doesn't give you a right to treat other people like they're dirt. Especially men. And if you want to look at me for being a hater, how about you consider the fact that my mother is in a gay relationship? And I love her because she's my mom. And she has the right to choose. But of course she doesn't treat other people like dirt. And yes, I have a dad too. I'm living in my dad's house. This is all his. My advice to you, as a feminist, is to look at yourself before you look at other people and try to say that you're more superior. Because if you're one of them feminists, nobody told you to not like men. And if you're a feminist because guys didn't treat you the right way, that is your damn problem. That is nobody else's. Nobody made you think that. And if it's because you haven't found a man that would treat you right, you haven't been looking hard enough. Because there's plenty of men out there that will treat you the way you want to be treated, but they don't even get a chance because of people like you. Like I said, nobody made you think the way you do. We were all put on this planet for a reason. Both genders, all races, all religions. All shapes, all sizes. All the deformities we're born with. Life is what you make it. People are what you make it. Your life is what you make it. Why don't we start worrying about other people and stop worrying about yourself because you're fucking selfish? Why don't we worry about being treated equally? How about you treat other people like you want to be treated? If you want to be a princess, how about you treat everybody else like a princess? Maybe we'd all get along. Why should women be more superior? How about everybody be superior, no matter what you have? But honestly, if you'd like to comment on this, I opened up comments for everyone if you want to look down there. Because I've been on a lot of feminist YouTube channels, and they've disabled comments. Big fucking surprise. Well, guess what? When I say things, I take consequences. I take consequences for what I say and what I think. And if I don't like what somebody has to say, I don't have to say anything back. So go for it. Comment on this. Make a video response. Like it or not. Everybody is entitled to their own opinion. But my opinion strictly is that everybody be treated equally. So go for it. That is my whole view on how I disagree with feminism.
Unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight. A dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas.
CBeebies Bedtime Story.
And here's a clip from Tom Bradley's novel, Killing Bryce.
Professor Edwine could hardly ever make his son laugh. From the time Sammy was a baby, the professor had tried to talk to him, had tested at least 36 different anecdotes on his ears. It was essential to instruct this future chief of the Edwine tribe, to transmit clan lore, to be wise and close and chatty. But the kid hardly ever responded. Eventually, the professor got it refined down to a pair of tales about the olden days that at least held the boy's attention, and even got a slight smile out of him sometimes. It was necessary to tell these in a certain precise way to even get the kid to sit down. The professor fairly had to start talking in tongues, and had to get all physical and gesture a lot. He had to play close attention to his phraseology and concinities. The first story was about the time when he was Sammy's age and that old bloomer button, Tyrone Power, came a-sashaying through the professor's hometown of Freely, Idaho, on a hunting expedition. In the flesh, Tyrone Power, that handsome heartthrob, he wanted to be like old E. Hemingway because he was researching a part in the Hollywood version of one of Papa's books. Except nobody had been kind enough to tell the silly old thespian that there were no grizzlies or even antelope down this low on the western slope of the Teton Mountains. Tyrone had the cutest little leopard skin jodhpurs on, all billowy and crinkly around his thighs. Ooh. Here the old professor would prance a bit, knock-kneed, and Sammy would watch impassively. And even though he was the rich bitch, everybody in the bar insisted on buying Ty Baby a drink. Banana daiquiri, if you please. But Tyrone was unimpressed and bitchy looking like this. Here the old professor would pull the appropriate face, glad in his heart that no video camera was at hand, recording this moment to be smuggled into future family reunions. And nobody wanted a big star like Tyrone Power to come away from freely with the impression that it was a boring place or anything like that. Oh, perish, Sammy. So they got me, old Easy Edwine, old String Bean Edwine, all 7 feet, 170 pounds of me, clomp, clomp, to do my famous trick, where I opened a bottle of beer with my bare teeth, held it straight up in the air with just my lips, no hands, Sammy, and let the whole 12 ounces pour straight down my gullet without swallowing. Here the professor would aim his face up at the ceiling and make gurgling sounds. Sammy might chuckle just a tiny bit if they were particularly good, gaggy-sounding gurgles like Linda Lovelace being asphyxiated by a palomino. "Look at Mr. Power," the other freely ice yelled. "Old Easy Edwine, he's an atheist bastard. He don't care." And Tyrone was so intrigued that, as a climax, he had me break the bottle against my temple. Maybe cross-eyes and a cuckoo noise here. Then Tyrone snuck out the back with his bodyguards, and we were all alone. And so there was the nightly fight to the death, Sammy. And I woke up in a dry wash 3 miles outside of town next noontime, as per usual, with a 4-inch gash on the side of my head and the most elegant autograph on my Adam's apple. Tyrone had to stand on a bar stool to reach it. The second tale of the olden days was about the time the carnival came to Freely, Idaho. This was the same carny where Professor Edwine got the reach on the black pro boxer and won the prize money. But that part had to be saved for his daughter because his son didn't respond to stories like that, where Daddy was the protagonist instead of the comic relief. And Sammy never wanted to hear the other heroic, self-complimentary carny tale where Daddy was watering the elephants to earn his admission, and this city woman was just standing in the midway, puffing a cool cigarette in the shade of the tent flap and watching him work shirtless, obviously staring at him up and down a full 20 minutes as he lugged those buckets. And Daddy knew he could have had her right there on the spot. Old Jumbo could have sloppy seconds. That was a daughter, not a son tale. It was necessary to tell Sammy only the weird part of the carnival mythology, about the pituitary kid, the 10-foot-tall sideshow freako with a $50 bill bobby pin to the crown of his head for anybody to keep who could reach it. Easy Edwine knelt among the crowd while the barker made the pitch, then stood up to his full height and collected the dough, simple as pie. He had to get up close to the pituitary kid's face, see his dead eyes, smell his sweet breath, feel the iron braces all up and down his rickety legs. The pituitary kid started crying softly and whispered, "Please don't, cousin. I'll lose my job. I'll become a ward of the state. Please back off, cousin." And then the barker announced through a giant yellow megaphone to all of Freely that if they could bear to part with Easy Edwine, he was invited to go on the road with the freak show. That's where the professor sometimes got a response from his son. Never any words, of course, but this slow, low grunting. It was communication at least, low level, but communication. Sam would make the low sound until he got bored again and then just sort of wander away into another room, and the old professor would end feeling strange inside. But you had to talk to your boy once in a while, no matter what. That was the rule. The only wisdom Professor Edwine still received from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints was their emphasis on the close-knit, communicative family. The only other time Sammy would act interested in the lore of the olden days and in things pertaining to his father was when somebody brought out the crumbling copy of the September 6, 1939 Freely Beacon and showed him the photo in the sports section of Freely High School's new First String Center. It was none other than Easy Edwine, his face mostly blank and full of question marks like it always was back in those days, wearing the too small jersey destined to be retired with him, number 00, palming a basketball in each hand, arms out perpendicular in the crucified position, while two little forwards stood on tippy-toe underneath, one joker scowling upward into Easy Edwine's bony armpit and holding his nose. The professor knew it was not for the right reasons that his son liked that yellowing old picture, but surely it imparted at least some sense of the patriarchal past, and it got something not too unlike laughs out of the usually morose kid, a response. So, on that day when Sammy said to his mother that certain too familiar thing, that one extreme time when Sammy called his mom a fucking cunt, and the professor disciplined him, smashed him up against the wall, and choked him, the last time, probably, that anybody ever laid a hand on the kid in anger or affection or anything else, and Sammy's eyes went dead, and he started that slow, low laugh of his, and his mother's fingernails were excavating the meat of the professor's big shoulder, that time, with Sammy laughing, it must have been almost by conditioned reflex, but the professor suddenly came up with another true story from the olden days that he thought the kid might like. An actual WW2 story set in the Pacific Theater where old Easy String Bean Edwine saw action and did his patriotic chore. And he told it in real highfalutin style as he choked the life out of his only son's eyes. The short little nips, Sammy, the way they run their POW camps makes the baton march look like a maypole dance. They starve your old dad's ass for months, keep it in a cage, tie it down to bamboo stakes, stomp on it, and then they get them a great big nip. Descended from sumos and samurais, Sammy, in peacetime a nip sideshow attraction. And this freak meditates, rises up, screams his kamikaze banzai scream, and swings down his sword with all his fucking might to chop chop it the bigger malik and down to size. Except the sumo samurai guy knows a secret and profound oriental discipline, Sammy, and he can stop the blade short at just a split second. It just barely slices into the skin and tendons over your old dad's elongated shin bones. And he does it night after night after night, his pals spitting and kicking, till they've got old String Bean Edwine, your old dad, Sammy, laughing and screaming all the time, even when he's asleep, even when he's chewing his weekly handful of rice husks. The professor made a long, horrible wail right into his son's face, and they both started laughing. He let go of his son's throat in order to hold his sides. Sammy sank to the floor, gagging and coughing, and the professor hiked up his pants cuffs. See the scars, Sammy? And he was on the verge of finishing the story, escaping, shitting blood and rice and mucus nonstop in the jungle, and the last part he'd never told a single soul about except his wife, only when he was half asleep, cold sweating up to his shins in a nightmare. The last part, showing what treatment like that can do to a guy's manhood. But Sammy suddenly rolled over on his pudgy back and gasped, "Stop!" There was a pause. Sammy glanced over to his mother. The, quote, fucking cunt, close quote, had meanwhile sunk to the floor as well, flat on her nice butt, dead-eyed also, and bloody fingernailed, making a certain hup-hup-hup noise that meant it would soon be time to drop by the credit union for psych ward money. Sammy looked at his mother and listened to her. He used the knuckles of both fists to knead his windpipe more or less back open, and he sighed two times. Then, eyeing his mom as if for approval, he explained in a hoarse whisper why the professor should stop. "Quit while you've got your audience rolling in the aisles, old Easy Edwine." Sammy laughed, ham-like, at his father's naked shins.
You know her. You love her. You cannot fucking live without her, Mallory.
I was born, naturally born, born bad.
Hey, Knox, somebody out here wants to meet you.
Born bad! It's such a sin. I guess I was born.